out how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event of the evening. And now, it's
time! It's showtime.
Of course, I was on mute, but everybody, welcome to the MMA show. This is the UFC 288 recap. As always, I'm the host for today. I am Cage. Ivan is away right now on work, so I'm going to be hosting today. Of course, joining with me today is Coach Rage. What is going on, Coach?
Hey, good to see you guys.
And as always, joining with us is Alex. How's it going, Alex?
Going good, man. Like, excited to be here and excited to recap this event, man.
I know. This took place at, of course, the Prudential Center in New Jersey. They've held a lot of events there, ironically, over the last few years. It's been one of the go-to arenas outside of Las Vegas. Before we get into it, what were you guys like first opinions on the fight card? I'll start with you, Rage.
I looked at the card. I didn't think it was going to be very good. And I watched the card and I was right. there was a lot of... Oh, God, the judges, Derek Cleary, or however you say his name. Man,
Cleary, you got it right.
Yeah, he wants to give Sal D'Amato a run, right? But, you know, neither of them will ever be as bad as Adelaide Byrd, but
yeah.
God damn, guys. However, that being said, the IR division thrives on bad judging. Our whole one bell philosophy of go out, finish the fight, don't leave it to the judges is validated by judges like Derek Cleary and Sal D'Amato. Sal was not working that night, but
he's done actually a good job the last.
Yeah, he's been getting better. I know, right?
It's like he flipped the switch. He was right? Okay, you take it. Yeah, you take the mantle of a bad judge, and I'll go back to being a subpar decent judge, because the past couple of like judging fights, he's done a good job. And like you said, it's been Cleary. There's another guy that's done a bad job. Yeah. The one that did the Bellator and UFC fight back to back nights. I don't even think he's done anything lately. I forget the guy's name.
Yeah. We will say that a lot of there was two fights that were switched out and changed around. And so there's some short notice fighters stepping up and very impressive, considering that they were short. I mean,
if there was four fights canceled, fight that was added, and then a fight that was put together from two guys that were on other fights.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's impressive. That's good. Right. And the thing about the UFC and their roster, more so than any other MMA promotion, they do short notice fights well. Their talent rarely shows badly because of short notice. So that's speaking to the professionalism of the caliber of the roster.
The show in the ring, in the octagon might be different, but they're showing up. They're like, they want that paycheck. That's a thing that's big with them. So they're going to take short notice fights. I've said this so many times. It used to be you train for 3 months and then you take a fight. But now it's you go in and you got guys that will take fights on 2 weeks' notice, 3 weeks' notice, just for the paycheck.
Yep.
And they don't need all that time anymore. The way that guys train now has kind of changed a little bit where they can ramp things up, or they're already training by the time that they're looking for a fight.
Yeah, and really, if you've got a good team around you, you should just always be ready. And the more professional you are, the better your diet's going to be year-round. You're not going to patty pimble it between fights. Alex, what did you think of the card?
Well, before the event started, I think the prelim card could have been a little bit better, and the main card too. But overall, it was a decent card.
I know it wasn't good for Phil Horace, I'll say that.
Man.
He got laid out.
That's a testament to.
And my buddy was in the same section as his family. His family was.
Were you there?
No, I wasn't there.
Oh, okay.
I was supposed to go, but of course, work oversees that. But my buddy, and a few other people went, and they sat in the same row, and people were heckling his family after they left.
Oh, that sucks. That's fucking New Jersey for you, though. Really,
that is.
Man,
that was North Jersey. That was the New York people.
Yeah, Bridge and Tunnel crowd. Yes. That's why they got that rep. But Akram Aliskarov, I'm saying his name wrong.
Akram.
Akramov.
Yeah.
He laid out Hawes and beautiful boxing. Yeah. And it's like, wait a second. Oh, you're a sambo fighter, but you can punch like that. Okay. Yes. All right. So
there was a little bit of deception with him, because the one loss they had was he only lost to Hamzat Chimaev. That's his only loss.
Yeah. Yeah. He's going to be trouble for that division. And I'm excited to always see what he does.
Like, I look at Phil Halls. They're hyping him up. He went to Thailand, trained the Muay Thai. And he always looks good early on.
Yeah.
But then he always makes those calculated risks that don't pan out, and he leaves himself wide open in the face.
You're being generous.
Yeah.
You're being generous. Yeah. You know, I don't want to sound too critical, but he has a lot of hype because of the way he looks physically.
Yeah.
More so than anything. If you actually look at his performance in the cage, he's not really, he's barely UFC caliber, and he's on his way out now. So, you know, that's how that goes.
He'll be picked up by like a Bellator or PFL. I think PFL.
And he'll do better. He'll do better. He'll have a longer career. He'll have a fan base based just upon, you know, just like, Mr. Wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, it's how you look. That's cool.
Yeah.
You know,
I'll run down a little bit of the prelims before we break down the main card. You had Claudio Ribeiro knocked out Joseph Holmes. I thought he looked better in round two. Ribeiro, he's going to be a guy that pressures you, gets in your face. He has power, but then he's going to take damage back. He doesn't do a good job of defending himself.
Yeah,
he looked good in the second round there.
And that's, you know, it's the first fight on the early prelims, right? And,
yes.
And you got Ugly Man Joe coming straight out of LFA, like green, making some rookie mistakes. And you could, that he was nervous to be in the big cage, in the big show. I like him. I'm Instagram friends with him. I like him. I like what he does. I think he's got a future. I think he's just got to, you know, tighten some things up. And
we talked about Akram Aliskarov. He got the win over Haas.
Yeah.
Parker Porter shockingly got the knockout over Braxton Smith. I thought Braxton was going to pull it out. Of course, it went the opposite way. Verna Jandadroba got the decision win.
Am I remembering correctly? I think in Parker Porter's.
Yeah.
Octagon interview, he said that was his first legit KO of his career. I think that's what he was, right?
I believe so. Yeah, he has a lot of decisions where he controls the guy on the mat, or he does a lot of like striking, but not damage striking. A lot of just touch and go, touch and go.
Yeah, and you know, Braxton Smith, that's a one trick pony right there.
Yeah,
just a big, huge, strong, explosive, athletic guy, but really not very well rounded. Really, you know, yeah. It's like
I was impressed with Janda Droba. She got the win over Marina Rodriguez. She moves up into that echelon to where if she can improve a little bit more and keep winning, she could be a challenge up there. Mm-hmm. She just needs to work on her striking, I feel like. I feel like she has the grappling down the jiu-jitsu. It's just the striking. It's too much looping shots and not enough deception with what she's going to do standing up. It's all to lead to the takedowns and controlling and wearing her opponent out. But against somebody like Marina, who has that range advantage, I was impressed with that.
Yeah. And she was ranked number 9 in the strawweight division. And now she's probably going up, right?
I believe she's definitely shown up in probably at the most 5, because I know Marina was up there after she beat Yan Zhaonan, who we're going to talk about in the main card. You got Kenny and Cheku, who got the standing guillotine choke submission on Devin Clark. Devin Clark was winning that fight, and then he gets caught in the clinch. And that range, that long length body of Kennedy had its advantages.
I didn't think Devin was winning that fight. Hmm. I think it was a fight. But yeah, I didn't think he was winning that.
I gave him round 1, and then Kennedy was doing good round 2, but then the choke, and that's all that matters.
Yeah,
in a fight is the finish, and he got it.
I was a little disgusted with the welterweight fight before that one.
Chaos Williams.
Yeah, and the other Chaos kid over from Bedoya. Yeah, and the kid from Peru.
Yeah.
The kid from Peru actually thought he won that fight.
Right.
Which really, that bothers me when you put in a lackluster, mediocre performance and then you act like you're something special and that you won. And it's like, man, no, everyone lost that fight.
Yeah.
Everyone lost that fight.
I was disappointed because I thought Chaos, this should have been a fight where he should have knocked out Bedoya, and he has showcased that he can do it. He just didn't, and he kind of allowed Bedoya to stay in it.
Listen, and Lance, for having such a perfect name, he's a shit fighter.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, bro, your name Chaos Williams. That's fucking awesome. And then you fight like that, and he doesn't improve. That's you know, it's like, oh yeah, you got natural talent, you got mad speed, you got great power, and you're hovering around at. So
and then the last one on the prelim, Matt Frivola knocks out Drew Dober. That's the first time he's been knocked out.
And I understand that this was the featured prelim, right? Yes. But damn, son, that should have been on the main card.
Yes.
Drew Dober is awesome. He's phenomenal. He's great to watch. And then Matt Frivola, woo, baby.
He came in there, steamroller.
His
nickname, it got to put to good use there, and he got the victory in the first round.
And I like
it's hard to crack a guy like Dober. Like McKinney
Dober's
did
got
it.
A chin. And he's tough as hell, and he's good, and he's strong. But Frivola, you know, the thing is, I think people see one fight and then that's the impression that they get, right? But yeah, man, Frivola, he's...
And everybody's talking about the triangle now with those three. Like, McKinney knocked out Frivola knocked out Dober, but then Dober knocked out McKinney.
Yeah.
So it's like this... It's all it talks about. You can look at whoever you want, but it's anything goes in the octagon. And
who do you, was it? There was a fight between Riddell, Brad Riddell, and Drew Dober. I don't remember who won that fight. I think it was
Dober.
Okay. I just like those video games where you can like choose the same character just in a different costume, or Ken and Ryu. You know, it's like
Brad. No. Brad Riddell won by decision.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was fun to watch because they were so much alike. And they,
Yeah. But before we break into that, we've got some comments. Jay Geezer, what's good, brothers? Thanks for tuning in. We got Graydon, the Bin Buster, debuted his show, The Director's Cut, last night, where he talked Guardians of the Galaxy. Hello, all. Please hit that like button, smash the subscribe button. And sing the bell for more content. Thanks so much. We got Nick, sup boys, have an awesome show. Thanks so much. You got Royal Gray. I was on his show Sunday night. What's up, gents? You got Tim. What's good? Which AEW figures are on the wall? He's talking to you, Alex.
Oh, mostly Series 1, but yeah.
Nice. And we got Streets. What's good, dudes? If you want anything to do with fantasy football, fantasy baseball, this is the guy to go to with this Roto Slappers podcast. He goes on every usually Sunday and Monday, I believe, and around your guys' time too. So if you're into that, check him out. But let's start with the first one, get this out of the way, because this was just very boring and I wasn't into this at all.
Yeah,
you had the featherweight matchup. Charles Jourdain defeated Crone Gracie by unanimous decision. It was 30-27, as it should. What were your thoughts on this fight?
I'll go last.
I'll start with you, Alex.
I mean, it's crazy. I thought Crown was going to get the win. I thought he was going to submit him very early. But no, Charles fought a really good fight, good game plan. Beating up in stand-up. You know, especially even the ground, Crown couldn't do anything. It's crazy. Crown's been gone for a long time. You know,
3.5 years. Yeah,
right. And when a person's gone that long, you know, when you have time to go to the gym and train, you know, he has his own school too. You know, he didn't really evolve. Fought the same style. It's just, you know, that's that, you know, go to the ground, submit you, and I think that style's kind of getting outdated. And, you know, it's that the way he fights is kind of like the way his father fights, you know, and it's just the game evolves. And stand up didn't look that impressive. The ground, he couldn't get anything on the ground. So, yeah, just it's not a good performance by Kron. But Charles fought a really smart game plan. He looked really good and, you know, got the win, looked really good.
Yeah, one thing that he didn't do, which was good, was chase Crone when he was on the ground. Like, you see the memes on there of Crone just crawling towards him for long periods of time. It just didn't seem like he was into the fight. It seemed like a lot of guys can have that long layoff. They learn, they expand their fight knowledge, the fight game. He didn't seem like he did it. No. Like, he's all about, of course, it's the Gracie name. You're all about the jiu-jitsu and the grappling, and Jourdain knew that, so he stayed away from it as much as possible, and then he landed when he needed to. He had the bigger shots, he had a lot of volume, and Crone Gracie just couldn't get anything going.
Even I just thought it was a guard, couldn't do anything. Yeah.
It was just a bad matchup for him. If Jourdain would have bit on some of those, maybe it would have been a closer fight. He just didn't bite. Jourdain was the smarter guy there. And I just was tuned out of this fight by round one. I knew where it was going by what I was seeing.
Yep. Yeah, so agree with everything you guys say. You know, Crone really, like, does he even want to be in the UFC? I don't, you know, it's like, okay, are you just finishing out your contract? He had enough time. He could have worked with a legit MMA coach, a legit striking coach. So he just chose not to. And really what he's shown He's shown how much MMA has evolved over the past 20, 25 years. And I believe he's shown that jiu-jitsu is the most overrated aspect in MMA. I'm not saying jiu-jitsu is not important. It's just jiu-jitsu doesn't work without striking and wrestling first. And you can win without jiu-jitsu, but you can't win with only jiu-jitsu. And so Charles Jourdain, he knew what he was facing, and that was his game plan. I think he was actually expecting better striking from Crone. And so then after round one, he figured out, oh, this is okay. Well, I just need to do the exact same thing for two more rounds for another 10 minutes. And, you know, and I at least applaud Jourdain for the end of round three, where he was like, well, at least let me try and and land the knockout. At least let me try and draw some blood here. But Jourdain also is a jiu-jitsu black belt. So he was able to, he was able to get right out of guard, stand right up, back out, shut everything down. So boring as hell to watch. But I think, you know, round of applause for Jourdain. And I hope, honestly, I hope Crone has fulfilled his contract and he just sticks to jiu-jitsu. That's what he loves. That's what he's great at. There's no reason for him to, there's no need for him to be here.
And here's the question. No, I'll let you go.
Oh, and it's one thing too, like, if you're really good on the ground and you're really good jiu-jitsu and black belt, whatever, and you, that's your game, you should be doing whatever it takes to get there. So it means wrestling should be your number one priority. If you're good on the ground, get your wrestling on point.
Yep.
And this is nothing. A lot of these guys don't have good takedowns.
I've seen some of these Gracies do a good job with their striking. Yeah, you got Belcher, you got Nyman Gracie. Like, he showcased a little bit of his striking where he can use that to set things up. And then you got
Conry.
Brian Ortega, who is one of the star pupers. He has a great striking to
Hoyce's son, Conry Gracie.
Yeah.
He's got a well-rounded, you know, obviously he's got the jiu-jitsu that you don't want to go there, but at least he's working with a boxing coach and he has a game, you know, has an MMA game plan where I don't know what Crone's thinking. But it looked like he didn't really care. It looked like he didn't really want to be there.
It's always good when you have the jiu-jitsu, but I feel like I'm not going to say it has to be like a secondary thing, but you have to be able to switch it with something else.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to have striking with it, use it and then use that, and then vice versa to transition or have wrestling. So at least your wrestling can go into the jiu-jitsu and you can set it up. Like, you can't really, like, just get to it without getting right in front of the guy. And then if he's a striker, he's just going to land shots and try and keep you at bay.
Yep. You have to have boxing. You have to have some sort of kicking and punching. You have to have some sort of clinch and takedown game. And then you have to have some at least submission grappling defense. But if you have a well-rounded submission grappling game, that's great. But this is kind of flipped on its head from 20 years ago, where the grappling arts were more dominant, because it's very difficult to not get taken down when you're trying to strike. If you're trying to strike and they're trying to take you down, you need good footwork and you need good takedown defense. And it's taken people a while to develop that game. But then you got guys like, you know, Israel Adesanya, who has really good takedown defense and really good striking. So we really barely even know what he does on the ground, right?
And a lot of that's with those guys is their base and how they set themselves up. Like, he has that karate style where it's very wide, and then he kind of depicts that it's going to happen. So he just plants his feet with that wide base, and it gives him leverage.
Yep. Well, and then the other thing that Izzy does really, really well, look at me singing the praises of Izzy on a card that he didn't even fight. But what he does really, really well is he uses decoys and feints and deception. Yeah. So when you think he's doing one thing and he does something else, it's hard for you to to get a hold of him. So anyway, next fight.
Yeah, let's move on. Featherweight, we got Mansoor Evloev defeated Diego Lopez by unanimous decision, 29-28, 29-28, 30-27. I'll let you start, Apps.
Yeah, I mean, Lopes came in short notice. I think it was like 2 weeks, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
2 week notice, yeah. I mean,
no, it was, right, it was Evloev was 2 weeks. Lopez was Lopez, like 3 days, 2 or 3 days. He was really short notice.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, for a guy that, fuck, man, for a guy for 3 days, I mean, I thought he did a really good job. You know, had some success in a couple moments. At one point, man, I thought he was in the middle of that armbar. You know, he had that, you know, it was very close. Yeah, he had some really good positions. He had good submissions. At one point, I think he even had a leg lock at one point. But, you know, looked really good. His stand-up is really phenomenal. You know, really mix it up. And it was a good win. Again, both guys showed notice. So, you know, overall, good win for Evloev. But I'm excited to see Lopes again with a full training camp and see what he can do. But, yeah, I think overall it was a good fight.
I give him props for fighting until the end. He had
– not a hard –
he could have just he could have just gave up early on, but he didn't. I'd call Evloev the guy that likes to play with this food because – he's the decisionator. Like, he could finish you, but it seems like he just wants to draw it out, wrestle with you, grind it out, and then just land shots. It's always on the mat with him. And he did showcase a little bit of the strike, and you saw in the picture there, he landed a couple good shots. But, yeah, he just likes to play with his food and win, and he can't lose right now. And I would have really liked to see him against Brian Mitchell in that fight. I was looking forward to that. I had Evloev winning that fight because I just felt like, just like this one, that's how it was going to be, I felt like. And I hope that they reschedule it somehow because I think that Evloev can rebook it. He's on the move up. I want to see him against these top featherweights. Like, you got Volkanovski, who just got announced he's going to be fighting, of course, Rodriguez later on in July. I want to see him against a couple of these guys just because he has that wrestling background that could be like an equalizer for him. I still want him to work on that striking because you need that opposite thing, but it seems like he can easily get his opponents to the mat and then just play with them. He has that leverage, he has that strength on him. But Lopes did have his moments in the fights, and it was good to see Dana White pull him aside and say, thanks for taking the fight, you did us a solid, you're gonna get that fight bonus. So that was good on him to encourage Lopes so that in his next fight, he comes in very motivated.
Yeah, I think Lopez, even though he lost, his stock went up. His real estate value went up. I think Lopez looked very impressive. He surprised me because he was actually better at the striking than Evloev. And I was actually a little bit disappointed in Evloev's performance. I thought he was a better striker than he is. I haven't paid a whole lot of attention to his career, but after watching this fight, he made some pretty rudimentary footwork mistakes, basic striking. He could, you know, and with a background in combat sambo, I just expected more from him. But what impressed me was he didn't tap and he got out of submissions where normal humans and even elite humans tap to that shit. And that knee bar, like, man, knees are not supposed to bend in that direction.
No.
So that was impressive. But, you know, yeah, it was cool. That was cool. But it was also kind of, yes, Will Gray, you need to watch more UFC.
Yes.
Absolutely. Everybody needs to watch more UFC except me because I watch too much. But, yeah, it was kind of a boring fight, though.
Yeah, you know, I think he underestimated Loops because he was taking on a couple of knees. There was prepping for Mitchell. I think he had done so much to get ready for Mitchell. Then you have a guy take the place of it who is of different skill set. So it's like, okay, I'm just going to go. And he just thought he was just going to go in and murder the guy. And that wasn't the case. Like he did control a lot on the ground, but Loops made him work.
Now, back to the judges, right? It's these scores make no sense. These scores don't make any sense. And Lopez showed well, but he lost every round and he wasn't really in the fight. He just was like, oh shit. He won the stand up and forced a shot, but didn't defend the shot. And then was dominated on the ground and then got some very close, almost near submission. How do you score? You can't score a near submission or a submission attempt as winning the round.
Yeah.
If you don't have top control, if you don't have cage control, if you don't, like, there's so many other factors, but these judges really, they suck. So
I hate the fact that they sit there right in the front of the cage. I always think that you should be up top, either looking from above or looking at a TV, watching on a TV and judging that way. So you can see everything, because I feel like the cage can block a little bit of what you can see and you're not getting a true clear look at what's going on. Whereas if you watch on a TV, you can see everything.
Yeah. They have monitors in front. No, they don't, do they? They're just sitting right there.
They're sitting right there. They could have monitors because I know the commentators do, but it's a small monitor.
I don't know. I don't accept that. I don't think it's that they're not seeing what's happening. I think they don't understand it. They're not trained. They're not coming from a fighting background. They're not coming from a coaching background. They're government employees, really, you know. But I love them because that just makes my guys work harder. Yeah. So
let's move on to the next one. We got the women's strawweight battle. Hey, Yan Zhaonan defeated Jessica Andrade by first round knockout. I'll let you start out with it, Alex.
I picked Yan to win this fight, but did not think she was going to win it in 2 minutes. she just caught her coming in and that was pretty much it. I mean, you know, and it's sad because now you think, well, what's next for Andrade? And I said this too, if you get a win over Andrade, now it's pretty much, you know, you got a big name former champion on your record and now you get a title shot. And I think that's what they're trying to go for, right? I think they want to put her against Whaley and I think in China. So, I mean, and it sucks now because now Andrade's kind of set where, you know, kind of like, you can win over her. Oh, you're ready for the next level. And I think that's where she is now in her point of her career. Because she lost this fight and she lost to Emily, right? Benchfield. So that's what, two losses in a row for her now?
Is that? Yes.
Is it in a row?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, she lost to them straight, Andrade, and then that one.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see what happens with her, but, you know, definitely not a good position to have two losses in a row and their finishes, so we'll see. But, yeah, Yan looked really good. Finished it quick. First round, can't beat that. So we're excited to see, you know, how she does against Whaley.
They were talking about this. This was a good point. She, after the loss to Esparza, she moved to the U.S. and started with, I believe it was Alpha Male, Team Alpha Male.
Yeah.
she started training with them, and you can see the dividends paying off here of moving to close, training with a different group. You see the more crisp striking, the movement, the stance changing. It was confusing Andrade. And then she was landing those snapping leg kicks to the lead leg of Andrade. And all of that was confusing Andrade because she was expecting one thing. And then it was just a completely different mindset. She was fast, throwing the kick, switching stances. And then once Andrade was trying to process it, that's when Jan was incorporating those feints. It was like, I'm going to incorporate the feints, and I'm going to confuse her even more. And then she was landing those straight shots where Andrade was throwing those power looping shots. She was landing a couple, but then she was taking damage to both legs, damage to the face. And then you saw when she got knocked down, they were circling after the two quick leg kicks. She threw the overhand right, and then as she was throwing the overhand left, Jan comes in with a straight hand and just knocks her down because she caught her first, and then she finishes her on the mat. It was just that accurate punches, good game planning. It caught Andrade off guard. And part of the thing I don't like about Andrade is the fact that she's too up and down with the divisions. She's not picking at the division and staying there. She's changing on the go. Every other fight, she's changing because she'll lose, and then she'll be like, oh, let me go down. I'll fare well there. Wins two, then loses one, and then goes back up. She doesn't pick and then get used to the weight class. It's just too hippy-hoppity with her. And everybody knows she's going to come with the power, come with the aggression. It's just that this time, Jan Zanon used it against her with her own speed. She was the quicker one. She was the more deceptive one. And if I keep seeing this, I'm very impressed by her. Like from the fight against Esparza, where she's a good striker, but not a lot of power. But then she has bad takedowns. She worked on the takedown defense in the Marina fight. She showcased that. And now you see more power from her and more speed from her. So she's adding more to her. Do I think that she's ready for Wang Lei? I don't think so. I still favor Zhang Weili, but she's definitely moving in the right steps. I think she might want to take one more fight to prep for it, but she definitely looked a lot better than she did 2 years ago.
So my wife was watching this with me, and she looked at me and she said, do you think Andrade took a fall? Do you think this was fixed? Do you think the company is trying to make it China versus China in China? And I can't say that I know. It makes sense. It looks like that could happen. And Andrade looked awful. Awful. So the question is, is she actually slipping? Is this the end for her? Because she looked really bad two fights in a row. And she's looked bad before, and then she's looked good, but she has not improved, right? She hasn't changed her game. It's like, okay, we know what we're facing. We know what's going on here. With Jan, I'm not even going to attempt her last name. I am not impressed. I'm not impressed. It's like, okay, yeah, you landed something straight. And I guess I'm impressed that, you know, a straw weight gets a knockout. But, I don't think she's going to be able to, like, if Carla comes back, she just had a baby. And if Carla, you know, is still up there in the rankings, that rematch could be interesting, but I don't think she's going to be able to stand with Carla. If Rose gets her head together, Rose will destroy Jan. Weili, like you already said, Jan is not ready for Weili. So
we even have Amanda Lemos too, who's up there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So, I think it's, I don't know, you know, let them, let the company do whatever. If they want two Chinese women fighting for the title in China, cool. Or if they want to let Wei Li retain her title against, you know, that's fine. But there's just such a huge gap in the strawweights between the top three or four and everyone else, you know.
And then you got a lot of people that allow them to fart each other. Like Carla fart Yan already, dominated her. So, but now she's having a baby, so that's not going to happen. Rose fart Carla twice and lost. That's not going to happen. But then that's why I'm thinking, why don't they just do Yan against Rose? And then you got Lemos, maybe give her a crack at Zhang Weili.
Yeah.
Or something like that. There's going to be somebody that is going to be out of the order there that's going to have to wait. So I think maybe because there's no clear-cut favorite to challenge Zhang Weili, have Rose fight Yan Zhaonan. Because then if Yan wins, then that's two big wins for her in a row. Or if Rose wins, then that's her, okay, I've already beat Zhang Weili twice, and then I've won twice since then. So that's what earns me my shot at the title again. Let's move on to the co-main event. This is the one that was put together just about a week ago, before the event. You got a five-round co-main event. Bilal Muhammad defeated Gilbert Burns by unanimous decision, 50-45, 49-46, 49-46. I'll get this one started with this fight. Just Bilal Muhammad just came in here. Like we were talking about this. This was a boring fight. I thought he just looked a lot better. And I might be the one that's going to be different about this, but a lot of people are coming in. Gilbert Burns with this shoulder. His shoulder was bad. It looked like he injured it when he was going for the takedown and Bilal Muhammad sprawled and came back up. It looked like he landed on the shoulder wrong or the impact. And that's what changed the fight. I have to give props to Bilal Muhammad too. He's not the guy, type of guy that's going to knock you out, but he's coming off of Ramadan. He's been dieting all month. And then he took this fight on less than 2 weeks' notice, literally during Ramadan. He was still doing it when he took the fight. He comes in here and he just landed. Those leg kicks were just very vicious to the shoulder and the side of Gilbert Burns. He was being very aggressive, moving forward without using a lot of energy. And he just landed a lot of damage with that. A lot of high leg kicks, high movement, throwing those jabs. It's just, this is what's going to happen when you got a guy who rather pushed a little bit of pace, but then manage his gas tank to go five rounds rather than go for broke and knock somebody out. That's what it's going to be with Bilal Muhammad. Like we talked about, he's not that flashy of a guy. He's not going to knock you out. He can be born, but he showcased that he can add to it and beat guys that everybody's bent against him. This is the third straight fight that he was the underdog, and he comes in and he dominates the fight, outvolumes him. After five rounds, he looked like he could go another two or three. He laid a lot of volume, and Gilbert Burns just didn't seem right. Whether it was that, whether he was coming in with that, and then he re-injured it, he just wasn't throwing enough. And then on top of that, that's where Bilal Muhammad was landing those leg kicks. So it was like they both took the fight on short notice, five rounds. Maybe they could have done it at another time, and the result could have been a little bit different. But Bilal Muhammad took advantage of the situation, landed what he had to land, kind of came out unscathed. And I always think of this, if a guy can do that, and even though people are going to not be happy, he can take a fight a month from now because of it, because he didn't take any damage. And that's kind of the kind of guy that Bilal Muhammad is. But I have to give him credit because his takedown defense is so good. He got taken down for a second there, but then he popped right back up. It's one of the best there with Adesanya, with Usman. It just so happens two of the guys are in the same division as him. So You don't talk about him because he doesn't have that finishing power. But he has showcased that his striking has been steadily improved. He can push the pace, and he can go five rounds. So that's going to be a recipe for him. I want to see him fight Colby Covington next. I want him to fight that because I don't think he's – like, I think he could be ready for Leon, but, of course, Leon, I feel like, is the better striker. But I do think with what he has added to him with those leg kicks, I think he could do well against Leon in a five-round fight. It sucks that their fight got canceled because of the eye poke in round two. But he's used everything that he learned from that fight and kind of improved from it. And he's always going to be the guy that's going to grind you out and win. He's not going to be the guy to go for a knockout. He did knock out Sean Brady last fight and kind of showcased that he can do it. But he's not going to do it. He was all about the switching of the stances, confusing Burns, throwing the leg kicks, mixing in the strikes, and pushing him back. And that's that with the shorter kind of hurt Gilbert Burns in this fight. It just made him look like a different fighter. On to you, Alex.
Oh, yeah. Muhammad, you know, did what he had to do to get to win. But, you know, here's the thing. If you're proving a point, you know, I'm next in line. I'm next for the title shot, and I'm next. And you're co-main event. You know, you got millions of people watching. And you got a guy that's one arm, and you're not going for the finish, and you're not proving a point that you're next. It's like, come on. You got one guy that has one arm, and you're not at least pushing the pressure, and at least trying to go for the kill. And he didn't do that. He played it safe, trying to get the win. And, you know what happened after that fight? People booed. And that's not a good sign, you know.
Well, it is. People were booing him walking out, so
right. And it is New Jersey, and that's
yes.
Man, if I was there, I probably would have booed too.
Right. Well, you know, babies born in New Jersey,
right.
The first word they learn is boo, then mom and dad. So,
but yeah, I thought he could have finished. You know, I would have loved to see a little bit more pressure, a lot of more. You know, this would have been a great moment to say, you know what, like, if you would have finished a guy like Burns, you know, now you can't say no to a title shot. But we'll see. You know, Dana always changes his mind, you know, so we'll see. But if he fights like this, I don't see him beating Leon. I know you guys said, like, the eye poke, but, like, even then, even before the eye poke, he was getting dominated on stand-up against Leon. So, you know, he's got to change something. But, you know, yeah, if he fought Leon, I Leon beat him.
Yeah. So he goes by remember the name, but I remember his order, his Starbucks order, where you write the name on the side of the cup and it's pumpkin spice latte and Ugg boots, because that's basic. And Muhammad is as basic as you get. His striking is so uncreative and that's just very basic, very rudimentary. He's durable. He's strong. He's got some athleticism, but he's got a very rugged frame. But he's got no head movement. He's got nothing to any. The word slick is as far away from his striking. So I was disgusted watching this. I was so unhappy that it was five rounds. I was just like, oh, God, oh, I got to sit through this for 25 minutes. And then the fact that Burns was injured off the PEDs, clearly visibly off the PEDs. Yes. So it was just, it was lackluster all around. And I'm looking at the rankings and, you know, okay, well, Belial and Colby could be interesting, but you're wasting money if you're doing that. The company is wasting money because Colby is a sale, right? So there's money there. Belial is a liability. You're going to lose money. So I'm looking at Rakhmonov, I'm looking at Shavkat Rakhmonov and Khamzat Chimaev to solve the Muhammad problem. And he's a problem. He's a problem for the company. He's a problem for the fans. The sooner we beat him and send him away, the better it is for MMA.
He's not a problem for my wallet. I'll say that because he's doing good for me.
Oh, okay. Okay. For it, you actually bet on this stuff?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, I got no conflict of interest.
I was very confident going in because you said it, he's not excited. He's
a grinder.
He's a grinder, but that's the thing. He's going to play the villain. He's okay with it. And it's like, that's all you got to do is solve him, beat him. But here's the one thing I like about him is he doesn't shy away from a fight. He's like, I'll fight him. But then it seems like no one wants to fight him. And whether it's because you're not going to make money off of him, it's like, well, he called out Chimaev. He called out Rakhmonov, but they're not taking the bait. But then you got a guy like Jorge Masvidal. He sells a fight great, but then he doesn't have the skills. He just doesn't have the skills. Yep. And it's like, at what point do you just give in a little bit? Because it's like, okay, let's give Masvidal 2-3 title fights before you give somebody else one just because he is excited. But then he loses 75% of the time. Whereas this guy, he has only showed that he almost lost the one time if it wasn't for the eye poke. And other than that, he's won 8 straight fights. No, actually 9 straight fights.
Yeah.
He grinds out. He wins.
He's a grinder. He just. Rah, rah, rah. Okay. But. You know,
I've seen former guys like GSP do the same thing. Grind, grind, grind. And
GSP had some flair. He had some charisma. Mm-hmm. And his skill level was night and day better. It's just Muhammad is just unexciting. He's just uninteresting. But like you said, he's the new John Fitch.
I wouldn't say that way because John Fitch just falls on a guy and lays on him. This guy will stand up and trade with you, but I feel like maybe he relies too much on saving the gas tank to go with the 4 or 5 rounds, and then he looks good with it. But
he doesn't have the capacity. He doesn't have the creativity. He doesn't have the footwork. He doesn't have the head movement. He couldn't tire himself out if he wanted to. He just goes forward, throws fucking blah, and that's it. And he's got great takedown defense, and he's durable as hell. But he's far from interesting.
Yeah, but I do think he's a problem, and I do think that he'd be. I think if he fought Edwards again, it would be different.
No way.
I think Edwards would piece him up.
I don't know. I just don't know.
What's Usman doing?
I don't even think he can get past Covington, honestly.
Usman wants to fight.
That's interesting. Shmaev. Yeah, but isn't Chimaev, hasn't he been put on ice? Didn't Dana said he's not fighting? He's got personal problems going on. He's not fighting right now.
I could see
Belial and Kamaru.
I could see that, but after Kamaru called out Chimaev, I think his mind is set.
Yeah.
On him, and you know how fighters are. When their minds are set, they're set. They're sit out until they get what they want. Just look at Colby Covington.
I don't know what you're trying to say about fighters.
But there is matchups that you can make. Like, you can have him against Shavkat, but then it doesn't seem like they're trying to do too much with Shavkat, because even though he has the flair and he has the knockout power or submission capabilities, he doesn't sell it either because he doesn't talk.
Right, and he's... Is he from Mongolia? Where is he? I think
he's from Mongolia, and then he trains in Ukraine or something like that. Something crazy.
Okay. So yeah, you know,
of that.
But, so he's more of like, he's like a hardcore fan.
Yeah.
Fan, but he's not a casual fan kind of fighter. Yeah, you know?
I think I think they have to pair him with somebody that can sell the fight, and then he winds up winning because he's the better fighter.
Yeah,
but because he can't sell it himself.
Yeah,
and they gotta be. They gotta be careful with who they pair him with, and that's why you don't see him jumping to put him with somebody, because it's like, okay, he's great, he's a great fighter, but we need somebody who can talk. So that's why I'm like, that's why I'm surprised they never paired him with Colby Covington that sooner, when they could have, because Colby would have sold the fight. Shavkat would have put on a great fight against him. That would have been a 5-round fight where it would have been interesting with his wrestling and then Shavkat's overall skill set and his reach. Because I think this is too soon for Colby to where, what has he kind of done to earn that title shot? I don't think beating Masvidal earns you a title shot with how much losing he's done. But somehow he gets it because he sells fights.
Yep.
And it's like, it goes back to that. If you can sell fights, you can jump to the top of the line without even doing anything.
Yeah. And you get to keep your number two ranking.
Exactly.
Okay.
Let's move on to the main event. We had the Bantamweight Championship. We had Aljamain Sterling defeated Henry Cejudo by split decision. You had 47-48, 48-47, 48-47. I'll let you start this off, Alex.
Yeah, I saw the fight twice. I saw it two times. The first time I thought Sterling had did enough to get the win. Then I watched the second time and I thought Cejudo had won. 3-2. It was back and forth action. I thought there was points that, you know, Sterling looked really good stand up. But then I just think if Cejudo would have done what he did in the fifth round, I think if he would have done it earlier, kind of eliminate the legs and just went, because the whole point is that earlier in the fight, it was hard for him to find that gap, to get in because he was such a smaller fighter. But, you know, he had success in the fifth round, kind of closing the gap, getting in close, landing the big shots. I think if he would have done that in the beginning rounds, I think he would have won the fight.
He did win the fight, but
yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, he won, but judges didn't see that.
Right, exactly.
Right, but no, I mean, he was gone for 3 years. Yep. And even though, I mean, don't get me wrong, like Sterling fought a good fight, but then again, it's like you fought a guy that, you know, hasn't fought in 3 years, and it was a close fight. You know, so it kind of makes you think. You know, even then, it was just like he went close to a guy that was off for that long. But yeah, I mean, I thought Cejudo did enough to win. And I think Cejudo wants to fight Merab, right? Like that's the plan for him, which I think will be another good fight, exciting fight, and Sterling will fight O'Malley. Yeah,
since he can't go down the list, he might as well go against the one guy that won't fight Sterling,
right?
Yeah,
so because of his partner, so you can do that.
Did you guys see the judge's scorecard in this fight?
I didn't, I saw it right here, how it's split like that, but I didn't see
scorecards. A mess.
Didn't some give fifth round to Sterling?
Yes.
I'll be honest with it. I watched it both times. I gave Sterling 1, 2, and 4, and I gave Cejudo 3 and 5. And I thought clear cut Cejudo had the fifth. So I felt like confused that the fact that the difference maker was that round five, because to me, I felt like Sterling had it before round five even began.
Yeah. No.
And it's crazy how, like, even though you can have somebody and argue, oh, he definitely won round five, he got robbed of that, but how that could have cost him the fight, even though I felt like he lost. Because I felt like he had problems with the range early, like you said. Sterling was landing a lot of those leg kicks. He was doing the stand switches. he was getting inside the clinch, and whenever Henry Cejudo would stop the takedown, which was kind of telegraphed, he wasn't doing anything with it. That was the problem. He would just hold over his head, over his neck, because he knew about the neck injury where he had surgery, he had the plate put in or whatever, and he was leveraging that, but he wasn't throwing. He wasn't throwing any damage. So I felt like if he would have thrown damage there, that could have been like a round switch there. But he wasn't doing anything at all whenever he was doing that. Whereas whenever Sterling had him in the clinch, he was throwing those knees to the stomach, knees to the legs. He was doing damage. He was thrown even in the clinch. And round one,
damage in quotes.
Yeah. but he was throwing more.
Like, but he was throwing something.
It, like, it's better than throwing nothing.
Yep.
But he got taken down round one, but then towards the end, he took down Cejudo and then landed a couple of knees, and that kind of changed the round because he had success early. Then he got taken down for 40 seconds, but then he took Cejudo down and did damage for the last 20 seconds. And even they were saying that usually you see the end of the round, and that usually that gives you an eye point of that. So I was like, okay, it was like a flip flop. I gave the edge to Sterling at round one. Round two was kind of close, but I thought the takedown was a little too late for Cejudo, and Sterling had more damage, I felt like, in that one. Round three, I gave it to Cejudo. He took him down. He controlled him. He was leveraging him with the takedown defense. Sterling started to slow down a little bit. He started to telegraph again. Sterling was very good when he was staying at range and throwing those leg kicks and using the range to throw. But then whenever he would just shoot, he had issues with it. So I gave round three to Cejudo. But then round four, they had that big moment where it was kind of 50-50. Cejudo caught him when he was going for the takedown. But then he got caught in that wide stance, and then he got taken down, and he took the back of him, landing shots. I thought that was a round change in round four because I was going with Cejudo early, halfway through the fourth, but then I thought that was kind of the change of that round to me, was that switch into the takedown for Sterling, and then he did damage. Round five, all Henry Cejudo. He went with a different game plan, and then he got round five. So I had it 3-2, close. I had it 48-47 where he had 1-2-4, and then Cejudo had 3-5.
Yeah, so I the way I saw it, I thought, okay, and round one, everyone had it for Aljo.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody, clear as day. But I was pretty sure also that round five, clear as day, Cejudo, yes. Right? Yes. And I don't think Cejudo so much won that round as Aljo took that round off. At least that's what it looked like to me. He was he was cruising a little bit, and it felt like he had it in the bag. I think Aljo thought he won more rounds than he actually won, and was happy to coast in round five.
I think Cejudo coasted round four too, because they made them mention that his coaches were telling him he was up 2-1, and it looked like he wasn't going full throttle round four. It was looking like he was not conceding the round, but if he could win it, he could win it. But if not, then at least he would have more in the tank for round five.
I was confused, honestly, by Cejudo's performance.
Yeah.
There were so many things that he wasn't doing, and he was ending in the wrestler's front headlock. And there's so many things that a good wrestler, and I think he's a good wrestler, I don't know, Olympic gold medalist, can do from the wrestler's headlock. But all he did was just lay there. You can snap down and keep snapping down, and that's no risk, and it sucks to the guy that's getting snapped down again on the again, pop, pop, pop. He didn't do that. He just literally just kind of laid on top of Aljo.
And then even Sterling used that to his advantage, because then he would back up. He'd stay on his hands like this and then kind of just back up that way, because he knew he wasn't going to be able to throw a knee because of his hands being down. So he used that to his advantage to get up.
But in that position, there you've got a 10-finger guillotine, you got a Darce, you got an Anaconda, you've got you got a shuck, you got a snap. That there's so many things you have that Cejudo should have. Now, granted, Cejudo has little tiny T-Rex arms, so the Darce and the guillotine, the Darce and the Anaconda are probably not going to be options for him. But just from the grappling aspect, that he should have been hitting things, and he just wasn't. So I don't know what was going on there. Round two, I thought Cejudo won round two. Two of the judges thought Cejudo won round two. Now, round two to me is the round that was the closest, where it's like, okay, it could go either way. Round one, clearly Aljo. Round five, clearly Cejudo. I felt like round four was clearly Aljo.
Yeah.
And I felt like Cejudo just barely squeaked out round two and won round three. So I had Cejudo winning. But that being said, if you're going to the judges for the title, fuck you. That's, you know, it's like, man, you got to beat the champ to be the champ. You know, you can't do this half-assed performance. And that's why Aljo has no fans. He's hated. He won the title on a technicality. He won it by acting hurt and drawing the DQ from an illegal strike in a fight that he was getting his ass beat. He was losing that fight. All right, well, you're not going to win any fans that way, but you won the title. Okay, and you kept the title because financially that's a smart thing to do. Then he rematches Peter Yan, and we find out Yan isn't that great. We don't find out, holy shit, Aljo's phenomenal. We find out, well, let's go back and actually look at Jan's body of work.
Uriah Faber.
Yeah, right? You know, like, Uriah Faber, kind of old and washed up. Jan looked good taking out Uriah. Yeah, all right. Who was the next guy that he beat? Also a little old and washed up. Then who was the, you know, it's like, oh, okay. Jan looked great beating up old dudes. Then he looked great beating up Aljo, who actually had the excuse that he was injured and then he had to get the surgery, and then he came back and Aljo beat up Jan. Then after that, TJ, come on, a one-armed TJ Dillashaw,
and a guy
everybody
boos TJ, but then in that one it was kind of like 50-50.
Yeah, so You beat TJ, who's in the wrong weight class and has one arm. You're not going to win any fans that way.
No.
Okay. You didn't finish Jan. You won the belt in a slimy way that nobody likes. And now you're squeaking out a bullshit split decision over Cejudo, who's too old and in the wrong weight class and still gave you hard work. And then you have the audacity to call out Volkanovski, you know? And it's like, listen, if Cejudo does it, that's different. You haven't earned your strap yet, bro. And you don't have the awareness and you don't have the crowd. You don't understand who you are and how you're perceived. It's a PR, it's a public relations problem, and somebody needs to help.
I think he knows that people are hating on him. There's nothing he can do, so he's just gonna go with it, embrace it.
I disagree that there's nothing he could do. His striking, he's the funk master.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, you can put a little more grit and a little more violence in your striking. You can be a little more, man. You can't beg people for respect. You have to earn it, and the best way to earn it is to knock people out, and he's never done it. So you're not gonna win fans by whining that you should have fans. And I was a fan of Aljo coming up because I saw him do.
He had the great victory against Sanhagen.
He did some good work, and it was exciting to see. But then these last five fights, it's just been like, bro, man. And then his behavior, he's like your friend's little brother. Like, dude, No, you're not invited to this party.
And then,
come on, guys.
It kind of creates a problem because the guy that we think should have next is his training partner in Barab, who I'm very high on. And it's like, UFC has a problem on their hand where
they got a lot of problems because Barab is a PR nightmare too. He's like quasi Russian. You can't understand him. He's hard to like. He's not very interesting.
And then he does questionable things. Like you see here, he had Sean O'Malley.
That was brilliant. That was the best part of the whole night. Right, you got Raging Al looking over the shoulder with that goofy ass smirk. That's funny.
But he takes the jacket after Sean takes it off, puts it on, goes on the cage, and they're like, "Give it back!" And he's like, "I'm just joking with you." Yeah.
He looks like a Keebler elf.
Yes, he does. As you see here, this is what's going to happen next, though. He's beaten so many guys in front of O'Malley that it's like, okay, he's kind of next by default, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So it's going to be them two. Don't know when it's going to happen, but that's going to happen. And once again, Marab's going to be on the sideline because he's not going to get a title shot. He's not going to go after Sterling, and then Sterling's not going to go after him because they're training partners.
Yeah.
So just like Alex said, perfect idea now is Cejudo and Marab. And then do it in a couple of months. He wants to fight in August, Cejudo. It looks like, and he wants that. I think he wants that to be his last fight. I think he's at that point. I showed you guys that video that he posted on IG of him going through the fight. He was going through. He's like, I thought I had this. Maybe I didn't have this one. I wasn't too aggressive. He was just nitpicking himself. And then he was like, there's only so much I can do now at my age. So I think that'd be a perfect last fight for him against a guy that with the same type of skills.
I think it's an easy fight for him, actually. Mm-hmm. I think it's an easy fight for him. He doesn't have to worry about the reach and the speed and the striking. It's like, all right, okay, you want to wrestle? Guess what? Yeah. I'm good at that. So Aljo and Sugar. Skittles.
Yeah.
I think Skittles gets it done. I think he's going to beat Aljo.
He has the power in his hands. That's the one thing with the striking. One problem, though, with Skittles is his legs. They're very flimsy. You saw that against Chito Vera where
not that guy. The only way Aljo could win is get the backpack.
Yeah.
Right. But that's what he does, right? But Sugar, his striking is a problem for Aljo. But I don't know if he has the takedown defense, and I don't know if he has the back defense to. So I want to see the fight now, and it's two guys that I don't like, but I still want to see them fight.
It makes for a good fight. And then if Sean O'Malley can win that fight and then Barab either one stays put and waits or two fights and beats Cejudo, you could get a Sean O'Malley versus Barab and Barab can actually get that title shot.
Right. Well, Barab, regardless, right? So Rob's going to get the title shot eventually, right? If Aljo wins, he moves up the weight class or, exits stage left. So he's going to get that. He's going to get that title shot.
He needs it. He needs it with the work that he's done under there. This is one of the few times where teammates have not called each other out just to get the title shot. I will give him that. We're so used to seeing these guys being kind of cutthroat and be like, okay, I want that title shot. I don't care if we're training partners or not. But these guys have stayed true to themselves as training partners where I'm not going to challenge you. You're not going to challenge me. So that's something I do like about them. You're right. They can be liabilities with what they do kind of because of it. And I think it all starts with the guy that's in charge of them, Matt Serra. And I think that plays a part in it with that group that they have there.
I have to take issue with the commentary. They kept going on about the bantamweight division being the most stacked division. Yeah. At one point that was true. I don't think that's true anymore. I'm looking at the rankings here, and you know, there's not that many pound for pound contenders in the ranking, you know.
I think featherweight has stepped up, and that's become
featherweight better stepped than up
bantamweight,
lightweight, welterweight. All right, now we're talking about deep divisions with, you know. The problem with this sport is that fighters get old too quickly.
Yeah.
They age at an accelerated rate because of the damage and the violence and, you know.
Even to an extent, heavyweight has improved. You got
the new talent. It's shallow as
division. But you got this matchup Saturday. If Almeida can pull off the victory Saturday, he'll jump into that top six. And then in that top six, you got these young guys like Aspinall, Almeida, you got Sirigan even coming off the loss. You got Sergey Pavlovich. You got guys that can challenge and are
interesting,
young.
But it's not. You know, the thing is, it's like there's so many holes. You know, listen, man, I love me some Tai Tuivasa, but I would not call him a great fighter. Right? No. He's not well-rounded in any respect.
He's a knockout guy that just added leg kicks to his
name. Aspinall, he's coming off an injury, right? Didn't he have surgery?
Yeah, and he actually just got booked for UFC London against, Marcin Tybor. That's the main event of UFC London.
Yeah. Now, who were you? You were just talking about
Jailton Almeida.
Almeida. Why? I don't see him in the rankings.
He is ranked number 11, I think.
Oh, number 12. Here he is.
Number 12. He's fighting the Rosenstruck.
Oh, this kid. Okay. Yes. Okay.
He's a light heavyweight that decided to move up to heavyweight.
Yeah. The should be middleweight.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, bro. He's awesome. He's fun to watch, but
No, I love him. Like, I love him. Like, I think he's gonna just show out on a Saturday.
Yeah. And wrong just weight class, though.
What was that?
How tall he is?
I do not know his height off the top of my head. Oh, yeah. I'll look right now, but I do know that he should be light heavyweight, but he was bored of not being used. He is 6'3".
Oh, well, I retract that statement.
6'3", and it says he's 224 pounds and
so, you know,
cut down to 205.
Yeah, man. He's right on the cusp. I can't be mad at this guy. No. Right. I mean, first of all, he's up there wrecking legit heavyweights, right?
And he only moved up because he wanted to stay active.
Yeah,
no one wanted to fight him in light heavyweight.
Yeah, man, good for him.
I'm looking forward. If he can get past this, there's some fun fights for him. Like, I want to see him against
Who's he fighting?
Rosenstruck.
Rosenstruck.
Uh-huh.
Zarginho. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Wow.
Which is a good matchup for him as long as he avoids that knockout blow, the knockout shot that Rosenstruck does, the equalizer. But I see him just getting in front, taking him down, and then doing work, because that's what it seems like Almeida does.
Yeah, but man, Rozenstrike, man, there's just this, and I can speak from experience a little bit with guys that are that have that kind of bone density and just that kind of physicality and that kind of the technical term is effective mass.
Yeah.
Goddamn. You get hit with something like that and you're just like, what was it?
Ow. It's because he sits in weights and he counters you with it. So he's like,
yeah. And he's just, you know, a lot of that is just genetic. That's just how he's built.
And
how,
it's so different from Derek Lewis, where Derek Lewis has not got power, but he tries to put a lot into it.
Yes.
And even the Ngannou, same thing. He tries to put a lot into it. It seems like Rozenstruik's not even putting anything into it. He's just thrown it, and it's like effortless.
I was on a film project. It's a music video.
Yeah.
And in the cast was Henan the Problem. He's a PFL fighter. And he's like 6'10", 6'11". And he's just this gigantic. And jokingly I walked by and I threw a kick at his leg and he kinda, you know, he checked it. And my shin like tapped on, and damn, it was like, you know, those cement metal pole parking poles for to stop you from driving. It was like kicking that. I've kicked a lot of shins, and I've worked with a lot of fighters, and it's just like, damn. And Rozenstruik has that kind of bone density where it's just like, wow.
that's like I said, it's the equalizer. Like, he's very passive with his strike and he doesn't showcase any aggressiveness at all. But then he could be losing a fight and land that shot, and then boom, he wins. Yeah. I believe he showcased that in the Alistair Overeem fight, I believe it was, where he was losing, lands the shot in the last round and wins. And he'll do that to guys. But then when he doesn't land that shot, he gets dominated by the volume count because he doesn't throw that much. He relies too much on that shot and too much patience. And his coaches have told him that. So he's tried to incorporate a little bit more. He showcased a little bit better against Blaydes, but Blaydes was able to take him down and control him. He did good in his last fight, which was good. But I just... it might be a little biased, but I just see something in this Almeida kid.
Yeah,
he's aggressiveness. Yeah, there's something there where, like, he'll go up against anybody, take them down, and it's not like he's just going for the rear naked choke. The last couple of fights, he's done the ground and pound. He's showcased a lot of the ground and pound, holding guys there, patience, like, fight IQ, and it's like, and this is against heavyweights. This isn't against the light heavyweights, so I feel like he's taking advantage of them with the fact that he's a little bit smaller, kind of like what Ciryl Gane did, but Ciryl Gane came in with a different style because he was more kickboxing, more striking, but this kid is more about their grappling. He wants to get the fight to the ground and finish you there. And every fight that he has been in, he's won by finish. So he is a finisher. And he's getting his opportunity to main event this Saturday. And it's on live TV on ABC. So,
oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. So the whole card is on ABC.
Is it also on ESPN Plus? I hope.
I believe it is too. Yeah. And it's an early one, so the fight card starts at 9 a.m. No, 10 a.m. your guys' time.
Oh,
and
wow!
The main card starts 2 or 3 p.m. your time. Cool. So it's going to be an early one because it's on ABC.
All right.
But other than that, I guess we'll wrap things up. We talked about everything we had to do. Anything you guys have to say before we head on out?
559 fights on Saturday. my boy, my fighter, Dylan the Butcher Ludwig.
Nice.
Making a presence in the cage, baby.
Nice, nice. And what about you, Alex?
Yeah, we got a new episode coming out, I believe next Friday. We'll make the announcement on Monday. And yeah, just follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and find out who it is.
Yep, and for the show, please don't forget to subscribe to us on YouTube. Follow us on all the social media platforms at Circle Debate. You can also find the Circle Debate on the Bloodline Entertainment Network. Find us on www.youtube.com/BloodlineENT. That's also the Twitter handle that we have, so follow us on there. Subscribe to the YouTube page and check out all the content that we have on the Bloodline Entertainment Network. We will be back. We got quite a few weeks. We won't be back until June, actually, for UFC 289, which is taking place in Vancouver, I believe it is. And it's going to be headlined by Irene Aldana versus Amanda Nunes. For, you might as well just say the bantamweight and featherweight title, because they're both the same thing as of right now, because they have nobody at featherweight. So I just like to combine both divisions at this point.
There you go.
They've showed us nothing that they have any investment in that featherweight division. They literally have five fighters that fight there. So we'll be back in a few weeks. Gives us a couple weeks to get ready for it. We'll come in, preview it, and then, of course, we will do the recap the week after. So check us out. But, of course, I'm Dan. This is Coach Rage. This is Alex. And we will see you guys next time.